Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Tom Davis here, the host of the No Bad Dogs podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining, as always. And I know I say that every podcast, and I know you probably hear it in a bunch of other stuff that I do and a lot of other people, but I really do sincerely appreciate you guys listening to what I have to say, and I really, from the bottom of my heart, hope that it helps. That's all I really want to do in life is to help dogs. And we got a great podcast for you today. This is, again, one of those things, guys, that like, It's the whole intact dog thing hitting that maturity. And so I'm actually going to, if anybody out there is listening to this knows, I've talked to a couple different veterinarians about this in particular. Dr. Diana or Rihanna Rice was on here talking about it, kind of breeding more specific. But this is one of those things, again, guys, it's, hey, my one-year-old male dog is starting to become aggressive, and my next question is are they intact? And they say, yep, they are. And so it's definitely becoming a thing. And as you guys know, I'm a big believer in what's in front of me and not what's written down in books. And this is something that people are dealing with reality-wise every single time that I talk to them. So it's something's going on out there. But this is another just great insight for me to know how impactful some of the stuff is that we're doing. I mean, this is a person that said she's watched my videos and other people's videos, and it's changed her husband. It's changed her perception. It's changed everything and how she's worked with the dog. And again, it's like when I put this stuff out, guys, I don't know the whole thing. You know, it's like I'm just trying to help. And if I can help one person, I'm just super happy. So this is a great podcast dealing with a lot of different things, talking about intact, not being intact, what to do with a dog that's aggressive, how to find the right trainer, do's and don'ts of all that stuff. We also start talking a little bit about something that I have never announced yet. You guys are the first to hear me talk about it. And if I don't cut it out of the podcast, you'll hear it at the end, start talking about a tour. So we're trying possibly to work out a U.S. tour in the fall. I've been talking a lot about, I've been working and thinking, how am I going to get around without, you know, we talked about, me and my team are working out the flying details, and it's just really difficult logistically to do what I do, because I'm not going to be going and putting on shows at venues. Not yet, anyway. So you may hear us talk a little bit about this. So if you do, again, you know, make sure you guys subscribe to all my social medias. I'll announce it here. But we are trying, I'm not going to promise anything, but we're desperately trying to get a U.S. tour booked. So anyway, all right, I hope you guys like this video. And as always, if you guys listen to the end, I'm going to be answering your dog training questions. If you guys want me to answer your specific questions, all you guys have to do, of course, is go to the iTunes review chart, leave your review, and in the review, you have an opportunity to answer your questions or ask your questions. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do me a solid favor and review this. Yeah, support the No Bad Dog movement by just leaving a review. It's free, and I would appreciate that. All right, you guys, let's get into the podcast. What do we got going on?
I have a year-old old English bulldog, and he is from a working line.
Mm-hmm.
He's got me stumped. I've always had bully breeds, Dog de Bordeaux. I've never had a problem that I couldn't fix anyway. Mm-hmm. He had some surgery. He had a knee problem and an elbow problem. And so we had surgery, and of course that was during his the second fear period. He's just started, lunging at everybody. And, that includes my son, who lives in the house and has, you know, he's grown up with, obviously not grown up because he's only a year, but, mm-hmm. I've never had a people aggressive dog.
Okay. So you have a 1-year-old old English bulldog. Yeah. Is he fixed?
No. So that was one of my questions. Mm-hmm. Because he had the surgery, and it caused all these issues, I was afraid for the staff to be trying to take him back in there to get neutered.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what?
Okay.
Do you think that's going to make a big difference? Because I mean, if it's pure aggression, is that? Because I mean, all these stupid reports that people are coming out with is, you know, fear aggression, don't neuter them, it makes it worse, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that in most of my job is collecting data and seeing what works for most of people, but also seeing what doesn't work for most people. And I can tell you every single dog that gets described to me the way that you just described to me what's going on is intact. Every single one of them.
Okay.
So that's how I knew he wasn't fixed, because it always starts out with, well, I got a dog, he's in between 8 months to 14 months, and all of a sudden, he starts to be aggressive. I see this literally every single week. So there is something to it for sure. Now, if you get him fixed tomorrow, I don't think that's going to change anything, because a lot of his hormones are already set. So, you know, and that's the hard thing for me, is I don't know why this happens necessarily. I don't, I can't say for sure that that's exactly what it is, but I can tell you again, if I were to do the study out of everybody that I work with every day, this is like clockwork. That's why it's funny, because we go through these, you know, on social media, whether it's my podcast or my YouTube channel or whatever, we go through this forum of, hey, Tom, I got this dog and about a year old. And I'm like, yep, he's intact. It happens like clockwork. So right now, is he actually biting people, or is he just kind of, being reactive?
We haven't allowed him to get to that point. We did take him to a trainer. That we found on YouTube that happened to be in my area, and all I looked up was aggressive bulldog, and nothing came up. But I mean, he's old English, so he's different than most bulldogs. He's not a little squatty thing that can't breathe and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so anyway, took him to this guy because I mean, he looked like he knew what he was doing. And he does, I believe, to a degree. He doesn't stop things, though. So we went for a consultation, and my husband and I and the dog. And so we're sitting there, and he was late. And, of course, you know, all the dog sounds, all the barking and all that stuff going on just made him more hyper. But he did, he went to sleep. He was shaking so bad, and he went to sleep. But as soon as that guy opened the door, oh my God, he was up. He was ready to rumble. And, he didn't look at him. He came over and sat down in the chair and was asking us questions. And I mean, Capone continued to growl and stuff. And he finally settled down, and he went back to sleep. And then, so we thought that the thing was over, you know, board and train, blah, blah, blah. But,
so you did a board and train with him?
No, we didn't do a board and train, because the guy stood up and he goes, I'm going to do something crazy. Just let the leash go. Mm-hmm. And we let the leash go, and he woke up and popped up immediately and went on, and he had a muzzle on, a Baskerville, and just started, I mean, muzzle punch, muzzle punch, muzzle punch. I mean, he did that for, and the guy never took his hands out of his pocket. And I mean, he just continued, and he grabbed his leg, and he was, you know, it was intense. And he had, you know, had him, just kind of walk around and stuff. Like, he took the leash and kind of walked around and stuff, but he still continued to muzzle punch. 45 minutes, he muzzle punched him. And I just felt like he didn't do anything to correct him, though.
Yeah.
And that kind of didn't set right for me. And then plus the place kind of, it definitely leaked. I'm freezing right now, so I'm sorry if I'm my voice is all shaky. So the place, I mean, I thought the guy might be able to help me, but I just, the smell of the place and everything, I was like, no. And so anyway, I did bring him back for a second time to try to see if he would be different with us away from him.
Yeah.
And he continued to muzzle punch him, but not like he did the first time. And he was outside, and we were inside, or I was inside, I should say, and he was walking. And he would, like, muzzle punch him behind his leg, or, you know, I mean, he's just not having it.
Got it. Okay.
So
right now, your biggest concern is with Capone going after other people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he's a total liability right now.
Okay. So... Yeah, and you've worked with the trainer, and that kind of flopped on you. What type of let me ask you this: what type of training have you done with him, and what type of equipment are you using with him when you're out with such a big, powerful, pushy, potentially
dog,
aggressive
yeah.
dog? Yeah.
Okay, so we got him at 11 weeks, first of all. So I didn't get that first 4 weeks or 3 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
Of initial thing. But I did a lot of, I don't know, do you know Stony Dennis?
Yep.
I
don't know him. I've seen him.
Well,
on...
you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so I started doing a lot of that because we're very active, and we mountain bike, we hike, we kayak, we do lots of stuff, and we've never been able to take our dogs with us because Dog Day Bordeaux are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've just never been able to do that. And so that's why we thought, let's get this athletic dog and, you know, have him come with us. But anyway, so I started doing, following Stony and doing all his, you know, the proprioception stuff, which worked out great. The dogs loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he got hurt. And I don't know, the surgeon said it was genetic, but of course the breeder's like, no, I've never had this in any of my dogs. And
mm-hmm.
You're not feeding them the right food and this and that. And it's like, yeah, I've had giant breeds. It's like, I know what I'm doing. But anyway, so then he was in pain starting about, you know, 5.5 months, and they told me it was pano. And so we were waiting, and
so did you do
better.
Yeah, did you do any are you training with him or
yeah I'm sorry, I started with slip leash.
Mm-hmm.
Once he got a little bit bigger, that was it was too much.
Mm-hmm.
For me to try to move him around. And then while he was hurt, though, I pretty much kind of stopped because he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we went to, after seeing the trainer guy, we went to the gentle leader because that's what he wanted us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were doing that, and we've had some success with that. But once he starts pulling, he's low to the ground. He's strong. And plus my husband, I will tell you, my husband undoes everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finally showed him enough of your videos, that giant schnauzer one that you posted yesterday.
Yeah.
That finally clicked with him.
Oh, good.
So he's finally starting to, listen. And so I have moved to the prong. Prong doesn't work as well with because he has a lot of skin folds around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to work as well. And previously, I never actually knew how to use it. And, you know, I've been binge watching your YouTube videos, and I figured out how to use it, and it is working a lot better. It works with the female really well, because she doesn't have all the skin folds that he does. But anyway, so So we've been using that, and I had already started, you know, trying to do place and sit and wait at the door and, you know, all that stuff, you know, and wait for the food bowl to be sat down and things like that. So it wasn't that we weren't, or that I wasn't training at all. It's just that I wasn't being, and after again, watching your videos, I wasn't being specific enough or clear enough.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm much more clear and fun. I'm much more fun because, you know, it's less stressful.
Yeah. Cause yeah, that makes sense. So right now you're using just the Genaleader?
No, prong.
Okay. You are using the prong. Okay. I thought you said that you didn't use the prong cause of his skin. Okay.
Well, no. So yeah, previously I haven't. And then I figured out how to use it watching your video. So.
Okay. So with his obedience and stuff, I know that it sounds like you're doing some stuff inside, some impulse control, some threshold stuff, which is nice. When you go outside with him, is he doing anything outside? Is he transferring this stuff outside? Is he doing well outside?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we live on 2.5 acres and we're and I have horses and things like that. Mm-hmm. We're on the corner. And a lot of my neighbors walk their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're on the corner and my dogs are like at the fence barking all the time. And I decided when we moved into here that I wanted to have ranch dogs because that's what you have when you live on a ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not very good mentors. They bark their heads off and they don't stop. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying. So yesterday, people were walking by and I had him, I was doing, you know, work with him and he was already on leash and everything. And we were inside of my yard and the dogs were walking by and I just walked, you know, towards over there and, you know, just did the, you know, heel, heel, that kind of, you know, your little, tune-up thing. That's mm-hmm. what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, trying to keep him from turning his head, his whole body towards where the dogs were walking by. You know, it was a little difficult, but that was our first time. So I'm hoping to be able to do that on a daily basis to try and get him to where he's not, you know, so reactive. We did sign up for another training package with a different trainer, Dog Training Elite. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. But they use the dog tris and they use, you know, so I looked up Balanced Dog Training and they came up. They don't use treats at all. While we're training with them, we won't do that, but so they come to the house for 8 sessions and then you go to the park with other people at your, you know, as you feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to start that today. But the little girl popped out of the car and I thought, oh my God, there's no way you're going to be able to handle my dog.
Yeah. So it sounds to me that, what you really need to do is, because this is a bigger dog that is intact, and he's going to keep getting stronger and faster and more probably reactive to things that's going on. I think you should really, I think the best thing you should do is to do what you're doing is going down the route to find a trainer that is suitable for you.
Uh-huh.
Because right now just and most of my job is to talk to humans about what's going on with their dogs, obviously.
Right.
So
right.
Judging by the conversation that we're having currently is right now you are on the offense of finding somebody to help, which is, I think, what you should be doing because of how much dog this is.
Uh-huh.
So my advice is to find that trainer that you're toggling through right now. You're kind of shifting through who's going to fit best and who's going to work for you. And that's what my suggestion is to you, because you're already using
this is your second dog training company, and then maybe there'll be a third or possibly even a fourth. And that's not uncommon at all when you're dealing with behavioral issues, because there's not too many people in the country that are successful with giving you the results that you need to be successful. So I would suggest to continue on the route that you're on to find that dog trainer that's going to help you in person. Until then, I think just understanding that this is a dog that obviously needs more of what he's getting. And it sounds like you're doing some outside work with him and stuff. I think the trajectory of what you should be doing is really tuning up the basic skills on the leash, like that Schnauzer video that I posted yesterday. Perfect, perfect example. We have a dog that is bred to be a protective guardian dog, living on, I think, 10 acres, never been on a leash, and it's going after the other dog. So when they came in, it's the same thing, kind of what you're dealing with is, if your dog comes in with this reactive possession, aggression, whatever it is, I don't work on that because that is likely caused by a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. It's a very mechanical thing. Same thing with the human body, or maybe even a vehicle or a vacuum. If there's something not working right, it's probably because of something else attached to this system. And right now, because he's starting to, it's kind of consistent that he's spiraling out of control to react to people he doesn't know. So that's going to probably stay consistent until you can lock in exactly the things that you need to be, things that you need to do to be successful. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it sounds to me that you're on the right path, because like I said, I mean, this conversation is exactly that. It's a consult of what you should or shouldn't be doing moving forward to be successful. And it sounds like you're interviewing and you're cycling through different dog trainers that are going to help. So I don't think it would be as beneficial for me to get into too much detail of how to do it on your own at home, because somebody else is about to unravel that you're paying way more money for. So, but again, like, my perspective of this is having one of these bigger, confident, pushier dogs that's intact around the 1 year age. They just typically, the way that I see it is the dogs will either feel like they can get away with anything they want, so they do it. Sometimes because the lack of control throughout their life or the lack of leadership throughout their life, they can spiral and start to be protective and basically go after everybody that approaches you or anybody else in your family that he cares about. So if he sees another dog walking, he'll be reactive. If you bring him to the vet, he'll be reactive. Things like this. So whenever you go places, he's going to react to the general public or to other dogs, anybody other than the people he knows. And like I said before, sometimes that's a foundation of not really knowing who's in charge, and then him taking initiative to be the air quotes leader of what's going on. And if you don't have the proper handling to handle the situation when it happens, it's only going to make things worse. So if somebody approaches you guys and then he says, hey, I'm going to handle this, and then you don't make the right call, that's when he's going to say, boom, that's his ticket. That's what he needs to do until further notice. I see a lot of this with Cane Corsos, Rottweilers, some of these really, you know, same thing with what you're dealing with the Old English, some of these really bigger, you know, protective dogs, and they can be pretty explosive. And I think that if you don't get it under wraps fairly quickly, this is where people end up.
Right. Well, and that's why, you know, even the first time we went to the trainer, he was only 6 weeks out of surgery. And, you know, the surgeon's like, you got to wait at least 8 weeks, and, you know, it'd be better at 6 months. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to be dead by then. It's like, no, we can't do that. But so here's my question right now. How do I get him? So they've given me sedation drugs and things like that to give to him before, because he was scheduled to be neutered on the 18th. And I canceled it because, again, because of all the reports and everything about, you know, making it worse. I didn't want to make it worse. So how do I protect the staff if I'm not there? I mean, I can't, you know, because they're going to have to wake him up.
Yeah, that's their job. They deal with this all the time. So I would just be responsible, and I know that you are. You would just say, hey, he has a stranger danger issue, and they will likely bring him. I don't know for sure, but I've seen this happen. I've had like police dogs that I've had to bring into the vets, and they are not friendly to other people, and they will hurt you if you let them, and they are explosive. And so what we've done in the past is basically the vet, I can hold the dog, the vet gives the dog the sedation with the dog on the muzzle, and then once the dog is sedated, even though they will still try to go after that individual, which is interesting because they can't really walk, they bring the dog in, the dog, and then once the dog is pretty sedated, then they'll sedate him even more, and then they'll take the muzzle off, and then they'll use whatever anesthesia or whatever, I don't know, I'm not a vet, whatever they do to put the dog under, they'll do their surgery. They might even put the Baskerville back on because the dog can breathe through that. They'll put him in the kennel. The dog will wake up. They'll grab the dog. They'll bring him out. So that's their, I wouldn't, that's their job. So I understand the, I'm the same way when I bring a dog in, and I have vets that I work with very closely. I also have vets that they're very frustrating because they don't understand dog behavior, or they don't respect it because they're in a, it just depends. I mean, it's like every other service out there. Every McDonald's is different. Every veterinarian is different. Every car that you drive is I mean, everything is different. But I think all you have to do is just let them know the type of dog he is, and that's their job. They'll handle it. They've probably dealt with 100 different dogs like him that month. But if you're going to a small town vet that has 4 or 5 clients a day instead of 150 like some of the bigger vets, you might have to take some extra precautions. And I've brought dogs in to vet clinics where the vet is hiding in the room behind their clipboard, shaking. And they're like, I can't.
That was the surgeon. Sure. He lunged at him one time, and he would like talk to me at the door.
Mm-hmm. They're out. And they're, you know, vets are not behavior. They don't do behavior. They didn't go to school for behavior. They didn't sign up for behavior. They are science and medicine. So when you get, and that's the thing, it's like I said, I have friends that are vets. I've had vets on the podcast. I've had these conversations with people. Is if you get an aggressive behavioral case, this kind of throws up their schedule. They're used to dealing with cute little puppies and kittens and rabbits and these little small cute things. And when they get a dog that's trying to actively hurt them, they would rather not. They would rather not. And they'll let you very clearly know that they are uncomfortable in hopes of you maybe going somewhere else. I've also seen some vets say, here, hold my beer. Let me show you how to do this. And so that's just been my experience. So I, like I said before, is you just have to be open and honest, and there might come some time throughout the process if they're not, I mean, you can just ask them, hey, if you guys aren't comfortable with this, I'll try to find somebody else, and you might have to drive somewhere else. But there's certain vets, it's like training, right? I've seen, if I'm like, hey, let me have the leash, I've seen people's eyes like bulge out of their head like, the last time this happened, and I'm like, well, I'm a different human, so let me do my thing, and then things are different. So I've even seen it personally how contrasted it is from other professionals in the field, and then, you know, professionals who are very comfortable with doing stuff like that. So it's very I think it's very normal and very human of you to be, you know, worried about it. But like I said, as long as you're like, hey, he can be a bit reactive, he can be a bit aggressive, and they give you some sedation pills before you go in. He's going to be kind of tipsy-turvy when you go in. He's got the muzzle on. They'll come out and do what they need to do. I mean, and if they're experienced with it, they'll come out and maybe they'll have a catch pole on hand. If he does get weird, they take the catch pole. They can give him the meds. He gets knocked out. They do their surgery. They put the muzzle back on so he can breathe. They put him in the kennel. They catch pole him back out, and then you take him. I mean, I've done that a bazillion times with dogs that have come into our board and train program that maybe aren't really great with everybody. I have to teach people how to handle these dogs under these circumstances because I don't necessarily want to get out of bed at 11 o'clock to go help somebody let a dog out. I have to train people how to do it as well. It's not the funnest thing to do, but you know, if you do it right, it can be pretty easy.
And so have you,
So if you have a dog like that, because I mean, we're looking at 12 to 14 years of this. And and I'm just, I mean, this is not what I signed up for. This, you know, I told the breeder I'm looking for, you know, mm-hmm. I want a fun loving a pet. I don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, but
what'd the breeder say?
Well, he said, you know, well, you are getting a pet. He didn't tell me that this, because I mean, he's had ectopic ureters. He has ectropion. So he's not like this guy has. He breeds very nice dogs, which is, I mean, because I did my research. He breeds very nice dogs, but I didn't get one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I got one that didn't have all the stuff.
Yeah. Did they? Yeah, I understand. It happens. It's a crapshoot. Yeah. It's a crapshoot.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And I didn't feed. He wanted me to feed puppy chow for the first year. Made me sign a contract. And I knew I wasn't going to feed that because it's crap.
Mm-hmm.
And but I signed it because I wanted it. He looked like a dog de Bordeaux, only smaller. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm in love.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and so that's always something that I recommend too is to contact your breeder, because if they're, and like I said, you know, it's a hit or miss. It's definitely difficult I mean, if you get a purebred dog, it is, you know, okay. So the conversation of breeding dogs versus adopting dogs and stuff like that. Like, listen, I have a 18-year-old dog that I got off the PetSmart floor at a SPCA concert or SPCA adoption clinic, and she's the best dog I've ever had. She'll probably be the best dog I'll have forever.
Yeah, she's, my $50 dog was the best dog
exactly.
I've ever had.
But if you do, and here's the thing, is I support buying a well-bred dog, because I understand that people, so there's kind of two different parties in the dog world. You know, there's the people who just love animals to the absolute infinity and beyond, Buzz Lightyear type stuff, but they don't understand some of the more complicated working environments that dogs need to be bred for to make sure that this $70,000 to $80,000 dog doesn't bite a person doing TSA searches or isn't sitting in a hangar in Afghanistan and bites the wrong person, things like that. I mean, dogs that are bred, like the dog that you got, also you can say, hey, I know what I'm getting. And I don't have to worry about this dog developing hip dysplasia at 12 months, and I have to put this dog down and spend a fortune doing it, and it's the saddest thing ever. If you get a dog that has hips and elbows checked and they check out, and the breeder will guarantee them, that's kind of, you get what you pay for. Now, I don't really fall for obviously the puppy mill stuff, but other than, you know, if you're not getting a dog specifically for work, or you're not getting a dog that you absolutely need to get for your environment, I always suggest just going to the shelter and getting a dog, because
they're the best. Yeah, that's what I've done many, many times.
Good. My point is the breeder is always a good first bounce back to say, hey, I haven't seen this. Because if they're a reputable breeder, they'll tell you if they've ever seen any of this behavior in their lines. And, you know, and sometimes they'll even help you train, or they'll find the right trainer for you. So what I would suggest is, again, I think you're doing all of the right things. It's just right now, as far as the sustainability, to kind of bring up the question that you were asking of this dog's going to live for the next 10 plus years. It's hard for me to say exactly what's going on. If it's neurological and it's like this almost retardation of I'm going to be aggressive and this is how I'm going to be forever, then that's a conversation you'll have to have with the trainer that's going to send you home with the skill sets to be sustainably successful.
Right.
But more than likely, from my experience specializing in behavior modification for the last 14 years, more than likely, dogs who end up like this are dogs that can be shifted and modified for the most part, if they are doing this behavior because the lack thereof X, Y, or Z, which is likely. And if you watch my videos like you have, you'll see that dogs will come in that will bite and
and come at me and lunge and growl and nasty and show their teeth. And when within 40 minutes, they're sleeping next to me. And, you know, and so all of that, which in my experience is typically from the lack of structure from their owners. A lot of dog owners don't start training their dog until there's a freaking problem. And so when they start 7 months old, intact, 8 months old, intact, big dogs, pushy dogs, or not even intact, we get a 7, 8, 9, 10 month old dog that was born with some sort of genetical fear, anxiety issue, just like humans get, right? These are genetics that can just be wired into you without your permission. And then they don't get the structure and security they need. They get love, attention, and comfy beds and slippers to chew on. And then they turn into a nervous, fearful, anxiety-ridden, stressful mess because the lack thereof. So it's kind of a bunch of combinations in between. But my job for the service that we're talking about right now as far as consulting with my experience is that the majority of dogs that are turning out this way are because of the lack thereof. So finding that trainer that can help you find, that's what I do. If you watch my videos, I say, let me see you work your dog. And within 30 seconds, ding, 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 ding. I'm rifling off all these things. I'm like, don't do this. Don't do that. Put your arm down, breathe, look straight, stop talking to your dog, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the trainers that you're working with are skilled and equipped enough to help you realize some of the things that you're doing wrong.
Okay.
So again, then, like with this type of case, it like I said, judging by your feedback and the conversation we've had, you're already looking for somebody to give him to really start to fine tune, which is good. But I think that because you're already in that route, I would just kind of layer in some of these, my opinions on some of these things.
Okay. And would you, I mean, because he seems to want to do bite work, would you, I mean, that's where his line is pulling and bite work. Would you do, would that confuse him if you took him? Would that?
No. I mean, so, okay. Confuse him? I don't think so. Because what, so when you're working on like bite work stuff, it's nothing that I've done it. My dogs will do it. I have a PSA group in my facility every week. I have canine officers in my facility every week. I'm around it. I'm in it more than most, but people are really in it. So I it's not my thing, but I will say when you're developing a dog for sport work, bite work, protection work, for outletting, for fun, for competition, for work, whatever, it's really a game to the dog. It's a form of aggression for sure, but the dog isn't doing bite work because they necessarily are aggressive. They're outletting, it's kind of this weird thing. They're outletting aggression, but they're not doing it because they hate the guy. Your dog is not playing that game. Your dog is like, I'm going to take a piece out of this guy because mom doesn't know what she's doing. Or outletting this type of like aggressive behavior in a positive way. That's why I said outletting with like a tug toy or with a ball. That would be great for just you guys. That would be fine. It would take a very specific, I think you'd have to really work out the kinks of this defense aggression, this I'm coming after you type of aggression before you get into actual like bite work. But I just think the answer is yes. I think if you got a tug out and you're like, hey buddy, and you started rewarding him with a tug, I think that would really help him kind of get some of that grunt type frustration out of him. So that would be helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I when he was, before he had his surgery, we had a horse ball in the round pen, and he would absolutely attack that thing, go out. I mean, but he went into the red zone.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't take it away from him. You couldn't. I mean, he was just, and he would lay on it like, you know, don't come over here. He wouldn't like try to bite at you or anything like that. He just would try to move it away from you, like, so you couldn't get it away from him. And so we stopped doing that. But my female, and she's a lot smaller than him, and she comes from a different, she's
basically from the same line, but she's been removed many, many times for more of a pet. I wish that had gone to him first. but she got rolled in puppy class. And now she's going after, all dogs when we're on walks or even in the puppy class. That, I mean, once the doodle rolled her, I mean, I had to keep picking her up. She was just, you know, don't come near me. So is that basically still the same thing as far as, spayed her, because we couldn't neuter him. So we spayed her just to make sure there wasn't any funny business.
Mm-hmm. So what's the question? You said she got rolled.
She got rolled pretty hard in puppy class.
What does that mean?
I was taking her to a class where they were doing puppy socialization.
Yeah.
So she was actually 12 weeks.
Yes.
So you do a little bit of training, leave it, that kind of thing. And then they let the puppies play. And then you do a little more training, and then they let the puppies play. And so there was a doodle, mm-hmm. and come running over and knocked her over. And then she was just on.
Mm-hmm.
And no other dog could come near her. I thank goodness it was towards the end of the class, because, you know, I paid for the class and we would have had to leave, because she was just awful.
Okay. So what's the question?
So now, except for the dogs that are in this house, she's worse than him as far as going after other dogs.
Okay.
So it's just basically the same, you know, I'm going to work on my tune-up stuff. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
So these.
Go ahead. I'll go. Okay, so. Yeah, I think it would be the same what you're doing with Capone. But the beauty of working with a hopefully skilled dog trainer is, like, what I like to do is if I'm working with one of your dogs, all of the information that you're getting from this teacher or trainer, whatever you want to call them, it should be applicable to the other dog for sure. It's making, like, when I train, I basically... The same stuff I give, like when I certify a dog trainer through the American Behavioral College, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of put the finishing touches, the polishing stuff at the end. I don't give my customers or my private clients, whatever you want to call them, any different information. So when I'm working with you, I want you to be able to go out and train other dogs, which is why I think a lot of people become a dog trainer. After they work with a dog trainer, it's because they're like, "Whoa, this is fun." So anyway, that would be my suggestion. My point is if you're going to invest all that money into another dog trainer to help you with Capone, I think all of the information that they're going to be giving you and all the skills they're going to be showing you on the leash and how to use look at the way I train. I go everything. I go soup to nuts. I go what equipment we're using and why it was originated, every safety protocol, every reason why the mechanics of that tool may or may not work for you, and then how to introduce it and how to sustainably use it over time for all the behaviors that we're also working on. I mean, I don't just say, give me the leash, watch what I can do. And so hopefully if you work with a trainer that can help you solve the issues you're having with Capone, it should be very transferable to your other dog, because it seems like they're dealing with similar issues, just in a different spectrum of Capone's, you know, dealing with stranger danger. I don't know you. I'm going to go after you. And then your female is working on dog reactivity. So yes, it's a lot of the tune-ups. It's a lot of the impulse control. It's a lot of counter conditioning with obedience, leave its enforcements. I mean, reinforcements, all that stuff.
Okay. I did get one of your e-collars.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the training package that I just bought, you do get a dog trial. I just don't know what one it is. And because I've watched so many of your videos, you know, I feel like I'm just a little scared to use it, just because I'm afraid of the timing.
Yeah.
And so I want somebody here to say, you know, now, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, do you find that the other one, I mean, if they bring me that little mini thing, I mean, I think that's, you know, is that
going to
be enough for?
Yeah. So a lot of the two things is you can always order yourself a sound box too. So if your trainer is using Dogtra's, they should have a Dogtra sound box, which will allow you to understand what the timing is. So the sound box, like in my videos, you'll hear me tap the remote and the sound box will go off. So your timing is you understand how to use it. Yeah. And when I transfer the remote over to my clients, I also know that they're doing it right. So there's that. If they don't have a soundbox, you can get one off of Dogtra. But to answer your question about the smaller remote collars, the e-collars are really, I always tell, especially for pet owners, when you're not dealing with trackings and routes of like hunting dogs or bird dogs or whatever, really for pet owners, the biggest difference between all of the remote collars is the distance. There is some low to medium outputs and medium to highs, but for the most part, when you're working with pet dogs, it doesn't matter really what collar you get. It's really about the distance that they go, except for my Tom Davis unit that we use, that we did with Dogtra, because there's functions on my collar that no other Dogtra collar has, like the boost feature and the continuous nick, and of course the bungee that comes with it. So, So yeah, I mean, I think you'd be a Dogtra is a Dogtra. I mean, some of them have more bells and whistles. Certainly, mine has the most bells and whistles, in my opinion, as far as versatility for pet owners. So,
right,
maybe request
it.
I mean, it's like $240.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
Yeah, I keep trying to win one too, just in case. But
yeah. No, it's nice. I mean, we're trying to give those. I'm pretty much giving two of them away a week on my YouTube channel. So,
yeah,
there's been a couple hundred people each video trying to win it. So hopefully one day you'll strike it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've spent all this, I keep calling, I'm calling him the 10,000, he's already $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, this is, again, not what I could have had a horse.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I mean, my horse isn't going to protect me on a trail either. So, you know, we have a lot of vagrants. I don't know how it is back where you are, but a lot of vagrants moving into the desert out here. And, you know, you try to go for a hike or anything like that. And especially, you know, my husband works a lot, so I'm by myself quite a bit. And that was another reason for having more of a protection dog.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. You're in Arizona?
Yeah, I'm in Cave Creek.
Okay.
So North Scottsdale.
Yep. I love Scottsdale. Go there often. A lot of my like professional athlete clients are there in the off season, so we go there quite a bit. I like Scottsdale, but
yeah.
Good thing is this fall we're actually planning a tour and we're gonna try to hit at least one city in Arizona while we're out there. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I don't have like Instagram. I'm an old fart, so I don't I don't really do all the, you know, different things. And plus I don't like them. Well, we won't get political. But anyway,
if you go to like our web, just in the future, if you're interested or it's something you wanted to follow along with, you just go to our website and sign up for our newsletter. All of our like seminars and new things are on there.
Okay.
So.
And you do that stuff too on the dog army?
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, that's your bet. I mean, the No Bad Dog Club is your best. That's the tightest knit first response, first get the news club. That's where I devote like all of them, because it's a community and we're building it like a brick and mortar community. And so that's where I put everything first. So yeah, if you wanted to sign up for that too, you'd be updated on everything. You get a lot of, if you enjoy the videos, you'll get a lot out of it just because it's all of the things that are in between that may, because we can't put hour and a half, some of the videos on there, like the video we put out just this week was like 2 hours long. We can't put that on YouTube. Right. So anyway, but yeah, that's where all of the most frequent updates and all of the updates will be first anyway, for sure.
Okay. I'll keep a lookout because I would really love to just even refresh or anything, because I'm assuming by by then I should have something under control.
I think so. Yeah, we're like I said, we are making, I'm pretty sure we're making a stop in Arizona, and the way that we're doing it is basically when I go out on this tour, because we've tried so hard logistically of how we're going to do this, and I've been working on it for years. And the reality is I just got to, like a musician, I just got to hit the road and go. So when we do this tour, we're basically putting it out on the public, and then people can sign up for private sessions when I'm in the city. So it's kind of, it'll be really cool. So we'll have like probably 3 slots per city. So if it's something that you are interested in, yeah, I mean, we could grind things out in person and go over some of this stuff. So yeah, if you're interested in that, when we're there this fall, would love that for sure.
Okay, well, great. I definitely, like I said, I definitely appreciate it, and thank you for putting all the videos out, because I'll tell you what, I've learned a lot.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I'm happy for you.
Well, and like I said, I mean, I just kept showing him to my husband, and he's just like, because he's tired. He comes home, he doesn't want to do it. Yesterday, I told him, he goes, I don't feel like I'm in the right mind to deal with this. I'm like, tough shit, it's your dog too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you should make sure he's consistent with what you're doing, because there's no use of you spending all this money on training if he's just going to kind of wipe it clean, you know? It's one hand washes the other. You don't want that.
Yeah, well, I think after we went to the trainer and he saw what he was capable of doing,
yeah,
he finally realized what we were dealing with, because I had been the one taking him to the vet and doing all the stuff and having to try to deal with all that. And once he saw, when he saw him grab his leg, I saw my husband's face. He just was like, now he's there.
Now it's serious. Yeah, that makes sense.
But anyway, okay. Well, again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And keep doing what you're doing, and good luck to you, and hopefully we'll see you in Scottsdale.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, you guys, we've reached the end dun, 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 of the podcast, which means more dog information. So this is from Little, or I don't know, L-I-J-N-C Mom. Sorry if I butchered that. Changed my mind about prongs. 5-star review. Thank you so much for the review. Great podcast for anybody interested in learning about dog behavior training and dog ownership. I enjoy the conversations with clients and how to show topics too. Tom, you have a gift not only to communicate with dogs, but explaining things to humans as well. I am now a frequent listener and look forward to new episodes on this podcast. Combining listening to the podcast and watching your YouTube channel has changed my mind about the purpose and proper use of tools such as prong collars, e-collars, slip leads, martingales, collars, etc. That's great to hear. Thank you for the feedback. I have a question. My otherwise good, obedient, 3-year-old female spayed Amstaff can become reactive, barking, pulling, crazy when I walk her with my son or foster dogs when we have them. She is being, quotes, protective when we walk together. That was a question. Like, I'm Ron Burgundy? Is she being protective when we walk together? It's the worst when we're trying to walk with a foster dog. If the foster dog starts barking and pulling on the double leash and being too puppyish, and will sometimes redirect onto the foster dog. She's correcting them or saying, hey, stop, question. Or when we walk, my son runs around and gets too far from us. How can I better my group walks? Okay, this is a great question. So basically her Amstaff dog starts to get a little bit more reactive when there are foster dogs in the works. And so what I would recommend is, I think entering a new dog on, like, your walk with your dog is kind of like a conversation. It is, I think going outside with your dog on a walk is the same as being in the living room with your dogs. I mean, their environment, yeah, you're outside. So in your head as a human, outside is kind of like this, I don't know, this different world. And for dogs, it is too, to some degree, but it's also an environment that they need to also still be respectful in. And so when you get a foster dog out and they're out and they're not really in control and you're expecting your dog to be in control, that's where frustration can happen. It can kind of become this competitive game where they're constantly comparing each other, who's in front, who's not in front. So what I would do is, it could be I guess if the question is are they being protective? Yeah. I mean, you got to think the dog's point of view. Okay, we got mom, we got the son, we got a new dog.
when we're out, it adds more vulnerability, more protective flares into the mix for sure. So you just have to do the best you can to control your particular dog. And maybe what you want to do is starting to light the load a little bit. So instead of going out with maybe you, your son, foster dog, and that dog, maybe you just want to say, okay, me and the dog, then me and the foster dog, and then me and the foster dog and the kid and the other dog, and just kind of variance it up. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it could be protective for sure. But if you're walking with the foster dog and the foster dog starts to bark and pull, again, like those are things that are warranted for your other dog to start to become reactive to a fair degree. So I would double down on the, depending on how long you have the foster, I would be working on the foster's leash skills separately and then start combining them together. That's my suggestion for that, to start really, because if the foster dog's going out without any control or obedience or structure, the other dog is going to say, hey, we're starting to spiral out of control where normally we don't, which can cause concern. So I would just work on that. I hope that that helps. Thank you so much for the review. I appreciate you a lot. All right. Fence fighting tips. Brooke DR. Maybe Brooke Doctor? Who knows? Hi, Tom. Thank you for all your work and commitment to the No Bad Dogs mantra. I have a 2-year-old Pitty that struggles with dog reactivity, and your videos and podcasts also gives me the perspectives and techniques to try with her. I'm curious if you have any tips and ideas on how to come back fence fighting. As I said, she can be reactive, so I understand that until we can really make some headway with the mindset, these solutions won't be perfect. To provide context, her reactivity is intense. She will beeline straight for the corner where she meets another dog, and she will snap, growl, and essentially redline into a fight. Imagine if I read everything like this, guys. The only way to get her to stop is physically remove her from the situations. Makes sense. We are in the process of solidifying her recall, but if she does not recall on a leash with us, there's absolutely no recalling her once she sets off. She is able to be responsive on walks, but seeing other dogs as we practice, leave it outside of the yard. She is starting to avoid the backyard at night. She is hesitant during the day. I'm not sure of exact cause of this, but possibly to avoid punishment from her fence fighting. But it makes me sad that she can't enjoy space that we specifically have just for her. At the moment, we have used a cover of the fence to make it more difficult for her to see the other dog through the fence, which makes sense. Short of getting a totally different fence, what games, techniques, or training opportunities might you recommend for this situation? Okay, so we have a dog that's beelining and fence fighting. So I think the first thing you should do, if possible, Brooke, I'm assuming, is talk to your neighbor. Say, hey, I'm really working on this. My dog is reactive. It's causing stress. I don't like it. What can we do? Can we have a schedule? Can you work with your dog? Because it takes two to tango in this situation. I'm assuming that the other dog is also reacting. I'm not 100% sure. But I think putting her on the leash and going over there and desensitizing her on the fence, and I do have podcasts on this particular situation, if you listen to all of them. I don't know which ones they are, but when you're working on fence fighting and you're working on this type of behavior, the recall obviously is what you want, but it sounds like your dog is going out and saying, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in trouble. But it also sounds like your dog doesn't know how to make a good decision outside other than react. So what I would do is go out and start to mix exercises about. So go out and start working on maybe obedience, or maybe working with a ball, or maybe working with a tug, or maybe working with, you know, anything that you can do to go out and try to reformat what the outside means. Go out with treats, go out with high reward food, go out in the morning with your cup of kibble and work on this stuff. So instead of going out and saying bad dog, bad dog, bad dog, mistake, 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 go out and counter it with tons of positive reinforcement to get your dog into a more groove of this is great, this is fun type of behavior than the behaviors that they're doing right now. Because I think that that's what's happening. So instead of going out and being in fix-it mode, go out proactively and work on a bunch of different positive reinforced things with just a leash. And even if then I would say over time, incrementally, you'll be able to get closer and closer to the other dog, and then start to teach the dog really that, hey, outside is a lot of fun if you work with me and you don't react to the neighbor's dog. So you have to just teach her what she should be doing versus the things that she's doing now. So I hope that that helps. It's a great question. Reactive dog question, 5-star review. Thank you so much, Mads, Aura, and Mav Dog. Hi, Tom. Love the podcast and your YouTube channel. I have a 1-year-old pit mix rescue.
He is highly reactive with every dog we walk by, lunging, barking towards the dog. I have been working with a local trainer who has advised on the use of the prong collar, but also urges us in the moments when he's reacting to poke hardly or kick the puppy in the side. This is not something I find humane, and also would know your thoughts on it during these moments. Okay, obviously I'm going to say that isn't appropriate. I wouldn't kick the dog. I wouldn't kick any dog. That's crazy. I would agree. Go with your gut. Go with your stomach. If you feel like it's wrong, don't do it. And I would agree. So you might want to just, you know, sometimes I say find a different trainer, but sometimes this is the only trainer in town. I would just express your... I couldn't imagine a dog owner saying I'm not comfortable with this and me saying it doesn't matter. I would never in a million bazillion years ever do that. I've never run into that issue, really. I've run into people having questions about certain things, or I've had people ask in curiosity of some of the things that we're doing in the future. And anyway, I wouldn't recommend doing that stuff. I would, this is tough. So I would obviously just try to find a different trainer, first of all. Second of all, I would tell the trainer that you're not comfortable kicking the dog because that doesn't make any sense to you. And it could probably make a lot of things worse. What you really want to do is, again, if you're a fan of my YouTube channel, you've probably seen a lot of my reactive stuff. So work on your counter conditioning with your heels, your turns, all of that stuff to counter these things. Don't go out, look for a dog, correct the dog. That's not the goal of using the prong collar. The goal of the prong collar is to give the dog information that is actually reinforced by pre-existing behaviors in the first place. So you're going out and you're saying heel, and then if the dog doesn't heel, you're using the prong collar to help communicate what you want the dog to do instead of just go out and say, hey, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog. So try to be more on the fence of, hey, I'm going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to give you an opportunity. Let's do this instead. Let's do this instead. Let's do this instead. So high rewards, positive reinforcement, all that stuff when you're out to counter. And the prong collar is just going to be a reinforcement behind your verbals as a safe tool to use instead of a harness or a flat collar or anything else like that. So you really have to really look at the big picture here. Again, I this may sound silly to you because you may have watched my videos, but I would go back and start working on some of the reactive dog videos. The other thing I would recommend... honestly, is to get into the members club. If you like my videos and you're struggling with reactivity and you're struggling with kind of with the trainer that you're working on, my members club gives you 2-hour videos instead of the 20-minute videos. So if you're like, yeah, I'm finding information on your YouTube videos, well, every video that I put on the members club is at least an hour and sometimes 2 hours. So I think you'll connect the dots on that. That would be my other recommendation. But that's my suggestion there on that. And next week, we're going to get into Ahmad from Dubai, Danny9429, and Spotify is superior questions. So make sure you guys leave a review, leave your questions. I'd be happy to answer them. Even if you guys don't have any questions and you want to support the No Bad Dog movement, because this is absolutely for free for you guys, leave me a review. Let's get this No Bad Dog movement continuing to take over in the dog world. Positivity, compassion, empathy, love, support, building each other up. That's what we're about. And I wish you guys the best week and the best weekend on this Wednesday. Have a wonderful, freaking safe week. Talk to you guys next time. Peace.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.